Hello again, and welcome to another episode of BitNote. We've got some great video game music tracks lined up for you, so I hope you enjoy. Okay, so let's start things off with a very nice, fun, and energetic track from a racing game. Sounds like a plan. And what you just heard there was the menu music soundtrack from Rush 2049 from the Sega Dreamcast. It was developed by Atari, and the music composers, it's a little hard exactly the person who composed it, but there was Michael Henry, Joy Lifford, and Barry Leitek. Barry Leitek, of course, has done some great classic tunes, such as the Supercars 2 music, and also, as I said, I'm not sure who specifically composed these tracks, because it turns out Rush 2049 had actually different soundtracks depending on whether it was released on the Sega Dreamcast, which it was, or the arcade, or the Nintendo 64. So, as I've said before, sometimes tracking down the credits for some of the music in these games is tricky enough, but I try. So, Rush 2049. Its actually full name is actually San Francisco Rush 2049, and that is because it takes place in San Francisco in the year 2049. The developers didn't know exactly what it would look like in 2049, so they just went completely wild and created a whole lot of really cool areas and things and stuff. When I first played this game, it was just a fun, bright and colourful, and everything was rushing fast. It's fully 3D. And when I played it when I was a little older, I started to actually recognise that there were a lot of, you know, all the little landmarks, like that windy road thingy and the great towers and every stuff. So the game feels and exudes the sort of like 90s arcade style at the time. There was a lot of energy and colour put into it, but everything that was ancillary or not needed was just thrown out the window. It was just racing. You got in the car, you drove around these courses, they were tight, they were fast, you played with others, and you basically just had to make sure you were across the finishing line first. In the arcade style, it cut down on the little details and just made everything fun. It wasn't just a case of like braking and turning. There were also ramps. There were also a ton of shortcuts. And that was part of the fun of the game. You'd keep playing around the courses, try to find all the shortcuts and stuff. And it would just all be about just trying to figure out the course, just turn fast and just get to the finishing line ahead of time. And a whole lot of adrenaline rush of just trying to get it done. The game also had the addition of wings, which you added to your car. Yes, wings. When you flew through the air, you could press a button and wings would suddenly spread out of your car, and you could have some small limited degree of control over how your car careened through the air. Ideally, this would make your jumps a little longer, or else it would align your car so you landed all four wheels on the ground. And that made sense because, you know, sometimes if you go spinning, you actually want to land with all four wheels on the ground. But apparently the developers also saw this had further potential. Dreamcast version, you also had a stunt track. Now, if you recall with Tony White's skateboarding games of the 90s, the whole stunt genre became popular. So San Francisco Rush had this, where basically you'd drive a car around this great big arena or something, and the idea was to race around, hit all these jumps, go careening through the air, and use your wings to spin yourself, turn yourself, do everything you could to perform as many stunts as possible as you careened through the air. And of course, so you'd go up at full speed, you'd hit a ramp, you'd hit a speed boost that would make you go up off the ramp even further. You'd hit the end, you'd go spinning, you'd stick out the wings and spin the car this way, you'd tuck in the wind so you'd span even faster, you went head over heels, accumulating more points. You would do barrel rolls, accumulating more. You careen through the sky, hit the ground, and explode into a gigantic ball of fire, which would eliminate every single point that you tried to earn during that jump. You would then do this again and again, constantly losing your points, until finally, through complete random spin of the coin action, you'd actually land with your wheels on the ground and hopefully not accidentally turn over, and then suddenly all those points that you'd earned during that specific jump would be given to you. Or at least that's how I played it. I obviously have to say I never quite got to grasp with how the right way to actually get the most amount of points. It seemed pretty harsh. It's pretty common for most stunt games to do it. You could, you know, if you want to do a really impressive stunt that'll rack up your points but increase the chances that you'll land hard and lose all the points that you were trying to go for and lose time, or do you want to just try another strategy? Or do you want to go for a nice safe jump, which won't give that many points, but increase the chances that you will actually land intact and not as an entire ball of fire? These are the challenges and questions that these sort of stunt games give to you. And that's one of the things that made them hard, but it also made them a lot of fun. So, that was San Francisco Rush 2049. Very energetic, especially played when you're playing with other people on different controllers and all, you know, classic split screen and everything. And it could be a bit hard, but the environments, which were, you know, which had all these ramps and turns and curves and jumps and everything, they were a lot of fun. And the way it redesigned the whole landscape of San Francisco, so it wasn't just a regular city but just this bright colorful city with tubes going through the top and letting you go down into the subway system and everything, a lot of fun and a lot very energetic game thing. I'll throw you the daytime track now as well. As I've said before, the music was composed by Michael Henry, Joe Lifert and Barry Litek. I'm not sure exactly which one did the track. I'll move on to the daytime track before we move on to our next game. We'll be right back. So, as I said, that is from San Francisco Rush 2049. All right. So, I was trying to listen to some good music to play next. And I thought that, you know, there's always something I've said about the classics. I talked before about the classic video game Doom, which it was released in the early 90s, pretty much changed so much about the video game industry, raised questions about violence, but it also, more importantly, taught about how, you know, first-person shooting games could be powerful in terms of how they sucked you into an atmosphere. And the original Doom was just so energetic, felt like you were there, and it also encouraged a lot of people to try their own mod programming, creating their own variations and such. But of course, like all very big and great games, there were sequels. And right now, I'm going to play you some music from the level 1 entryway from the start of Doom 2. I remember actually reading the instruction manual before this. Storyline had never been a huge part of the Doom games, but you know, I opened it up and read the story, and it said apparently since the last game, the demons had escaped from hell and were now plaguing Earth. And I was thinking, wait, is that what happened at the end of the last Doom? And then I kind of vaguely remember that there were some bad stuff happening and stuff. But I think I played Doom 2 before I finished playing the first Doom, you know, what have you. And then I gradually read through, and apparently what was happening is that there was all of humanity is in the spaceship, and apparently all these demons who've come along are preventing the spaceship from launching. So you have to go along and let the spaceship actually launch. Now, I never actually noticed the part where you actually let the spaceship launch, but I just figured, look, I don't quite get how the storyline is interacting with what I'm doing right now, but I figure I'll just make my way through the level and keep killing demons and just beat the level and then rinse and repeat for the several next levels. Will you happen to know that turned out to be the exact right strategy to beat the game? So, Doom 2, level 1 entryway. The music was, of course, by Robert Prince, Bobby Robert Prince. And have a listen. Some classic Doom 2 music. And it has a, and here's a spoiler for the game. You end up killing a lot of demons and other assorted hell beasts, just to let you know. All right, from the classic games of games of the yesteryear to more modern games that actually tip their hat to yesteryear, I'm moving on to a game called Gemini Rue, an indie game, well, as I said, a game that was largely developed and written by a single guy, which harks back to the classic point-and-click adventure games of the 90s. Gemini Rue is kind of a mix between a hard-boiled, you know, noir mystery and also a sci-fi, given the fact that they both, in fact, the game literally has you be able to switch between two different stories at the same time. Before I talk a bit more, it's very much an atmospheric game. The game pretty much starts as you a detective on this sci-fi planet with the rain pouring down, causing just that seems to persist throughout the entire game because there's a sci-fi explanation that, you know, that there's a weather station that causes the rain to pour down constantly because it's a mining planet and they need the rain for some reason. But of course, the real reason is that it sets the atmosphere for the game, and it sets as you search for your brother. You search out trying to find your brother who's gone missing, and the game play periodically switches over to this other guy who seems to be trapped in this strange sci-fi facility, and we guess that he's the brother that the guy is searching for, but meanwhile he's trying to perform his own escape attempt. So what will happen? Will they be reunited? Well, one thing's for sure, no one's going to achieve anything with talking to lots of different people and finding a lot of different characters in the game, and one of those characters happens to be a girl called Sayori, who ends up playing quite an important part in the whole game. In fact, a larger part than you might think of at first. So, to start things off, why don't I play Sayori's theme tune and then talk a bit more about the game itself. Have a listen. Thank you. And that was Sayori from the video game Gemini Rue. It was the actual person who created that game was Joshua Neuenberger, and it was published by Wajidai Games. And the music was actually composed by Nathan Allen Pinyard, who, as you can hear there, is very good at the big sweeping orchestral tracks and put a lot of effort into making sure that the music was just as atmospheric as the game and tried to get you a feel for the tone. As I said, the game is a bit of a noir, which means there's almost a bleak existential thing about it, about the guy going through his motions. And there is, like, guns going off and a bit of killing that happens in the game as well, which doesn't really help things. Most of the people who get shot are actually bad guys, of course, members of a Boryokuden, who are this, like, sort of like mob gang, only they've apparently managed to take over an entire planet, or at least a large city in a planet. But, and that's kind of what you're doing with. You're trying to find your brother in one part of the game and going up against the Boryokuden and ending up trying to see, in equal parts, trying to work with them and then work against them because, you know, they're the bad guys. And then switching between your the guy you assume is your brother and working, trying to escape from this facility that keeps trying to train you and keeps wiping your memory so you don't know who you are. And trying to make your way through it. Game also tries to hit a few philosophical tones as well. For instance, one of the most biggest questions it asks you is, if your memory gets wiped, are you the same person? This comes up because, of course, memory wipe is something that happens in the game. Indeed, pretty much the first thing that happens in the game is you see the guy in this advanced facility getting his memory wiped. And the first time it really comes to the fore is when you meet another prisoner who's also trapped with you, and they say, listen, they'll release us, but they'll wipe our memory, and I'd prefer to escape right now than have my memory wiped. And it's, of course, raised some questions. You know, like I said, if you get your memory wiped, are you the same person? Anytime a game really tries to, you know, make some serious points or be very moody or philosophical or think, you know, I feel I should be like pushing them on and celebrating this and drawing attention to it. But so often when a game does something so ambitious, I just think about how it tends to fall short. And I think the game does this to a small extent. For instance, it talks about, you know, if your memory is wiped, are you the same person? But it seems to forget about the fact that this actually happens to a lot of people in real life, you know, from brain damage or injury, and that it's the question is almost better asked than by asking these people and looking into medical stuff rather than making a whole like science fiction exploration of that fact. I unfortunately have heard of someone who was in a terrible car accident, and while they actually remembered most of their things and that had happened before the accident, their personality changed a lot, and to the point where even people close felt that they didn't seem to be the same person, and that's tragic. But it seems to imply that there's more to who someone is than their memory. And indeed, I think that that's a point that the game itself makes if you keep playing it long enough. So, all good. I'll leave you with the credits track of this game. It was also composed by Nathan Allen Pinyard, and it's from Gemini Rue by Joshua Neuenberger from and also published by Wajidai Games. This has been David Collins with BitNote. Thank you for listening.